Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 275.
This week on the podcast, the Women's March was on again, almost as if 1 year of Trump has had no positive impact on our lives at all.
And the government shutdown is a reality. And that means Congress had to work over the weekend. So it's not surprising that
Lindsey Graham really needs some sustenance. Even Democratic sustenance, even Schumer snacks if necessary.
And we've got a rare Brain Trust Live showdown over whether we're ascribing blame or credit for the shutdown this time around.
Plus, Aziz Ansari, the moment men were like, wait, could Me Too involve me also?
And Chris Christie is a nobody, officially.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
That's right.
Hey, guess what? Puerto Rico has no power.
Nope.
40% of the country still just hanging out in the dark.
Yeah.
Some towns apparently have started to just like string their own power lines, and they're getting the, sure. The Puerto Rican Power Authority has been like angry at them about this, but they're kind of like, well, fuck well, you.
What I was going
to
say,
our power?
I know.
Like, yeah, it's just exactly. Like an improvised force of electricians who have, they made their own stickers and everything in one town where they put hats on with branded stickers that they had printed themselves.
Yeah.
And
well,
just went around restringing power lines.
Yeah. If it makes the people of Puerto Rico feel any better, you know, the government isn't running.
Well, exactly.
So, I mean, we might not have power
exactly.
soon enough. There's no way to know.
Yeah, take matters into your own hands if you need to.
That's what you have to do.
I mean,
sometimes.
For God's sake. And we will have updates on CHIP and DACA, but they're going to come in the shutdown portion of the podcast.
Oh, they sure are.
So stay tuned for those. We still don't have them, by the way.
No.
We don't have anything at the moment because the government shut down.
Right,
but
exactly.
More on that in a second. First, we want to tell you about the Women's March.
Yeah, we went, obviously.
We went. We had a great time.
We're not going to go.
Oh. It's a time of the year when you can take the Metro with tons of people wearing matching outfits and
pussy hats.
Feel great about
By
yourself.
By the way, Carla Nordstrom, thank you.
Yes, she has been cranking out pussy hats like no one's business.
That's right.
She made them for several babies that are currently in my social purview at the moment.
Yeah. I wore
she
one.
Made my mom. I wore one. Brent wore one. Several other friends of mine
you
wore them in other cities.
You can find those pictures on all of our
social
meds.
Our social meds, as the kids are saying. We're not the kids, apparently, because we didn't know what to say just then.
Also, no kids say, as the kids are saying.
Nope. Only elderly people say, as the kids are saying.
That's right.
But so this year was a little different because the marches happened over 2 days instead of one.
Yeah.
I think because we
the
did
big,
ours.
The main one was today, actually,
because
that was in Vegas.
We did ours in L.A. on the anniversary of the first march, which is what New York did, and a bunch of other cities like Baltimore did that. I think Boston did that.
When it was on the
Chicago
inauguration.
Right.
It was on the anniversary.
Yeah.
Right, yeah, so.
Right, sorry, the anniversary of the inauguration.
Okay. Yeah.
And the other marches are doing it on the anniversary of the march,
right.
Is what it was.
Yes.
So
yeah.
They are doing the march today in Vegas, which is the main march,
is
about
big get out the vote.
Power to the polls is the hashtag.
Yes.
They're trying to do a big get out the vote thing, which is good. And then there are a few other cities that are doing them today as well. I think London is even doing one today. Rome did one yesterday. It's so nice that this became like an international thing.
Yeah.
I saw pictures from all over the world again. You know, remember last year there was that Times article went around with the pictures and it was like
crazy.
Mumbai, India.
Yeah.
Huge women's march.
Yeah.
And they had a very impressive one in Antarctica, considering how nobody lives in Antarctica.
Sure. Oh my God. I have friends who just went to Antarctica, by the way.
They could have been women's marching.
You can
women's march there.
You
can't do much else.
I know.
You can't go see a movie, but certainly go women's march.
You can hang out with penguins, though. Like, what's better than that?
That's true. Penguins are adorable. I once hung out with penguins, and it was one of the highlights of my life in nature.
You did.
One of the only times nature just didn't terrify the bejesus out of me.
Sure.
It was in the Galapagos. They were warm weather penguins.
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah.
I was like, was Newt Gingrich anywhere to be found?
No, it wasn't. No, Newt Gingrich, fortunately, not a frequenter of the Galapagos. I wouldn't have been either. Because the Galapagos are terrifying. They're just islands filled with animals.
Right.
There's nothing else going on.
And not
there.
All of them as cute as penguins, I would contend.
I saw an iguana fight.
No.
I was going to say it wasn't pretty, but actually it was fine. I described it on the podcast last week, and it was just two iguanas twitching at each other.
But, that's right. We had an iguana story last week. I was like, you were talking about iguanas last
week. I sure was.
But you were.
But the LA March had, they said they had 500,000 people there, which is crazy. It's very impressive.
Yeah.
I think the New York one had like 200,000 people. I mean, there were hundreds of thousands of people at each of these marches.
Right.
So that's for a second year turnout for a march that has no specific issue around it. That's pretty impressive.
It has all the issues around it.
Yeah. Well, it's like Occupy.
That's why it's a
march for everyone about everything.
That's right.
It's a march that's just a generic resist march. And
we
that's
heard,
enough.
We heard a lot of speakers yesterday and they all had, I mean, we heard about human trafficking.
Yeah,
we heard about, I mean, like everybody seemed
covered.
To have a lot of different celebrities all had their own sometimes odd, but not pet issues, but not not
issue
that,
of focus.
Not that, you know, not that any of them were wrong focuses, no. But as you said, it was sort of,
it's all,
you know,
the focuses.
It's all the focuses.
It was an opportunity for all of us to learn about all the issues.
That's right.
My favorite was that when Eric Garcetti spoke, there was just a guy that said, who was screaming, help the homeless over and over and over again. We couldn't hear anything Eric Garcetti was saying because
well, that's
of the guy.
A huge issue in Los Angeles. Yeah. And not just the homelessness issue, but like also there's been, you know, we've passed some bonds for homeless housing.
And heaven, there has, where is the housing
where is
from
that?
Those
and
bonds?
And there have been, and that is, so that is like a thing here right now. If you listen to any sort of like local news reporting, I'm not talking about the TV where they're just doing car chases, but like, you know, that like that, that's like the city of LA is like going through a homeless
crisis
thing right now. Like that's what,
Hilariously, Trump tried to kind of like take credit for the Women's March.
Right.
On, he literally tweeted, beautiful weather all over our great country, a perfect day for all women to march.
Yes.
Get out there now to celebrate the historic milestone and unprecedented economic success and wealth creation that has taken place over the last 12 months. Lowest female unemployment in 18 years.
I mean, you know, that's sort of like the most coherent and sort of like, you know, like, I see what he did there.
I see what he
did. You
know
what I mean?
No, I am shocked that he has not successfully done this with every issue. I mean, I feel like I'm surprised that after the travel ban, he wasn't like, glorious Americans celebrating freedom at our nation's airports.
Right.
Thanks to me. That's what he's just famous for taking credit for things. Like, I don't see why this would be different. This is just like him to do.
Yeah.
And I'm glad to hear that he's on board on Twitter, despite being rigorously opposed to any kind of female advancement in his personal life and professional life.
That's right.
But okay. Yeah. I'm glad that he feels that. He's proud of us for taking advantage of the great weather and going outside.
That's right.
So in any case, while we were marching, a thing that was happening in Washington besides a march was that the government was shut down.
Yeah. The 1 year anniversary of the president
was also
office.
The day the government shut down.
But he was working, guys.
Yeah.
Despite the government being shut
the
down.
The White House
he
released
was hard at work.
Some very convincing photos of him sitting at a completely
empty
desk.
Uh-huh.
Just talking on the phone.
Making phone calls, wearing a Make America Great hat.
That's right. Certainly wasn't posed. I assume that he just sits in that
position walking through the hallways
all day. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's a series of photos that really you shouldn't miss. It's...
But he couldn't go to his big $100,000 a plate
Isn't
party down at Mar-a-Lago, though. One of his dumb sons had to fill in for him.
God.
Can you imagine paying $100,000 to see Donald Trump, who I realize is obviously a fucking buffoon, but like, he's a, like, that's a person that you pay to go hear some crazy shit.
Yeah. He's
right?
entertaining.
And then you get Eric Trump in
that's
his place.
That's a nightmare.
That's a sad day for you.
That's also...
That is not money well spent, guys.
Shame on you.
I know. I agree.
You bought what you bought. And what you bought was an unreliable man...
I know.
...who may or may not send his dumb son
in
his
place. I think it's safe to say that he would have preferred to have been at Mar-a-Lago instead of posing for pictures in the Oval.
Yeah, I think probably... Although he does love a crisis to pose for pictures in.
That's true.
Harvey was a great opportunity for him to pose for pictures... Remember when that thing in Puerto Rico happened and he handed out a roll of paper towels to the people of Puerto Rico?
He threw one roll of paper towels
into a crowd.
Shot it like a basketball.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a man who loves to pose in a crisis. He doesn't. He likes to pose in a crisis. He doesn't like to act in a crisis.
Right.
But he
almost acted in this crisis, it would appear. It, maybe.
Well,
sort
no.
of, but not
he
really.
He acted the way that he often acts in a crisis,
which is
he said yes to everyone and then sat on his ass and did nothing.
He had muddled thoughts about everything.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But we are going to bring you through the 48 hours that brought us to this point.
Yes. And I, as I was, you know, we teased a debate a little bit later, and we're definitely going to have it because I still feel some things that I know you disagree with. I have some evolving opinions on it as I sort of like really dug into how we got here. Now, I still think the Democrats could bone the whole thing because that's who we are.
We agree on that.
We agree on that.
The Democrats,
yes.
If there's one thing we have always agreed on, it's that the Democrats are capable of ruining anything.
That's right. Yes. Now, this all...
They can snatch failure out of the jaws of
that's
success.
Right. They really can.
Anytime.
They can. Yeah. So this really started last week, and we talked about it on the podcast, so we're not going to run through the whole thing. But this started last week when Trump squashed the bipartisan immigration deal after he had already said that he would be open to a DACA, clean DACA deal, accidentally when television cameras were
around. I should note that for the second time.
For the second time, right,
he has already squashed the deal that he had already agreed to once before.
Right, and then he got a bipartisan immigration deal, and he didn't like that either. So the Democrats responded and they were like, well, we need a DACA deal to be in the funding deal.
Yeah.
And then they, so both sides at that point, like, started digging in their heels.
Right.
So we also had Trump throughout the entire week basically being like, well, let's just have a shutdown. Right. I don't
fucking care. We'll just do a shutdown. It's no big deal. We'll just shut down.
Exactly.
So, Congress, as usual, because the thing about shutdowns is they don't work out for anyone ultimately.
Right.
Like, I'm about to argue the opposite in 5 minutes.
You can, however. There's always a PR battle, and oftentimes somebody comes out the winner and the loser. In 2013, the Republicans certainly came out the loser.
Right.
Of that specific in time. Right. Of that month.
They
lost
November of an off year.
Right. But usually what people, like general, you know, John Q. public thinks to themselves is like, what? These idiots have like literally like one, like
one job. We gave them one job.
Right?
We paid them to do one job.
Right, to like actually like keep the lights on in the place.
And like they couldn't even do
they
that.
They can't even do that.
Yeah.
They can't make sure military families get, you know, their pay. Like, I mean, like these are the things that like shut down and, you know, like get shut down.
Right, because when a shutdown happens, the whole government doesn't shut down.
Right, exactly.
What happens is that everyone who is non-essential is furloughed and everyone who is essential works without pay.
Right, exactly.
Which is a terrible position to put everyone who works for the government
in.
Now, these people have no respect for federal workers, so I'm sure they don't care.
No, they don't.
But, I mean, what we're doing right now, the military is still active. The Postal Service has its own funding stream, so fortunately, you'll still get your Amazon packages.
Right.
But the military is right now going to be working without pay. Until when the shutdown's over, they'll get paid the back amount that they are owed.
Right.
But for the moment, they are going to go for God knows how long without pay.
Right.
The federal employees who are furloughed may or may not get their back pay. That's always a conversation after the shutdown ends.
Right.
But they could just be losing 2 months of work for whatever dumb reason these idiots can't work out.
Yeah.
So that's why,
so not great.
In general, the public is not favorable
and
towards
these parties really sort of at least pretend like they don't want a shutdown to happen. And it appears as though the Republicans were actually only pretending that they didn't want a shutdown to happen. Which is where I sort of...
Started to form some thoughts.
That's where they lost me. Not that I was ever with them.
No. But this this is where you started to form some thoughts opposition to your previous thoughts.
Exactly. So on Thursday... So the government shut down midnight Friday night going into Saturday. So on Thursday, the House actually passed a bill, a four-week spending bill. It had money
for
I believe, 6 years for CHIP it funded. Yeah, the Children's Health Insurance Program.
But no,
it obviously had no Dream Act in it at all. And it also, like, gave a, you know, they had some more, allowed for some more spending for military and, you know, whatever.
Right.
So
classic stuff.
Yeah, classic stuff. So they passed that on Thursday. Then on Friday, there's this meeting that no one sees coming between Schumer and Trump, where that's apparently called by Trump.
Right.
And all the Republicans are freaking the fuck out because, like, Trump has done this before where he has sort of like gone behind their backs and like had a meeting with
Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer.
Chuck and Nancy, as he likes to call them, which is their name. So
which,
that's
fortunately,
fine,
I've actually taken to calling them that too. I feel like that makes them sound like a crime fighting duo, which I'm sort of into.
Yeah. Anyway, so Chuck goes up there and they have some hamburgers.
Sure.
And apparently get really close to a deal. They leave and there's no deal done, but both of them are speaking like fairly reasonably about the other, which usually when you leave a meeting and you don't have a deal, like the two sides exit and then they shit talk each other like immediately in front of any camera that they can get in front of, which is Chuck Schumer's specialty.
I also, though, have a theory, which is that Chuck Schumer was like, okay, so we know he'll say yes to anything.
Right.
So I just need to walk out and pretend there's a deal. And he'll say yes, but he's going to say no after called him a great guy.
Right.
He's not going to deny being a great guy.
Yeah, right.
If I had a meeting with Donald Trump and I wanted to win, I would get him to, he would say yes to it. He says yes to everything. So it doesn't matter what you tell him in the meeting.
Right.
As soon as I walk out, I would say, Donald Trump is a great man who really deeply wants X, Y, and Z.
We had
very substantive, stable
genius level talks.
Exactly. And because of that, I know that a great man like Donald Trump wants to help us do X, Y, and Z.
Right.
And then he would walk out and someone would be like, so-and-so said you're a great man who wants to do whatever. What do you think? And he'd
be
like,
well, that's absolutely right.
Absolutely.
That is who I am.
I'm a great man.
Chuck Schumer knows me.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah.
So I'm hoping that Schumer has at least figured that much out about Donald Trump, if not...
Yeah.
So in any case.
But apparently he went in there and they actually were close. He offered some more money for the military,
some more
money for border security in exchange for a DACA deal. And they were supposedly going to get it done, but they couldn't quite get there.
Right.
So what Schumer at this point thinks will get them there is like a 24-hour or 48-hour deal to basically keep the government open, because they need it at this point, because they're literally like hours away from the government shutting down on Friday night.
They're called continuing resolutions, and this is what they have been passing this whole time to kind of incrementally fund the government. Right. But they need a continuing resolution for just a couple days to work out the details.
To finish the deal.
Yeah.
Now, here's where the Republicans lost me. Like I said, they never had me. But this is where they really, this is where I sort of like
where
didn't know all of this, where they strategically. Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan had no intention ever of even hearing any deal that came out of that meeting, and certainly not a deal that was only for 48 hours. They sort of thought to themselves that they might have to concede something, and apparently people are reporting that they were privately willing to go to a three-week funding deal to like
the
take
House
a deal. The House had passed a four-week.
Four-week.
So it was going to go. They were so, but when they heard this 48-hour deal, they were like, no. And Mitch McConnell apparently was reported as saying what? That it
That's
was nonsense.
Nonsense
or right, exactly. So that is ultimately, like, if you need to know specifically why on Friday the government shut down, it is because Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan said no to a 24-hour continuing resolution and then started shit-talking the other side,
like,
in the press.
What they said was no to having a negotiation.
Right,
and
yeah,
here's
exactly.
the thing. It's going to require a negotiation.
It is.
Why? Because they need Democratic votes to fund the government.
Exactly.
Sorry about it. Right. We had to deal with their dumbass nonsense when we had a majority in the Senate.
Exactly.
So that's life. That's what it is. That's what happens.
Yeah.
So in any case, they at this point have just both taken a hard line on it, because the Republicans dig their heels in and are like, no.
Right.
And then, what are the Democrats going to be like? Oh, sorry. Okay, we'll vote for anything. Like, they weren't going to do that.
Yeah.
And so then we had a shutdown. They immediately both tried to brand it. The Republicans tried to brand it the Schumer shutdown. Schumer tried to brand it the Trump shutdown.
Yeah.
Unfortunately,
it's
alliteration
I was
is
say,
working.
It's a bummer for Schumer that
in the GOP's
that
favor.
That works really well.
I know. The Schumer shutdown is a great,
good.
It sounds like a dance move.
Oh, and we've seen him dancing, too.
Yeah, and it's
not...
Remember
that? It's not good.
It's not good.
The Schumer shutdown
The Schumer shuffle, I think, is what we were calling it at the time.
Yeah.
But either way, the Schumer shutdown is a more accurate name for what his dancing does to a party.
Yeah, exactly. But McConnell and Ryan had met prior to that Schumer and Trump meeting even happening, and had basically decided amongst themselves that they were going to hold the line.
Yeah.
So short of Trump and Schumer exiting hand in hand from the White House... declaring, you know, a grand bargain of some sort, like surprising even them.
Schumer walking out with a signed paper.
Well, right, exactly.
That had already been passed by everyone.
Yeah.
There was not going to, like, it didn't matter. Like, it doesn't matter what Trump says.
That's true.
It doesn't matter what Schumer says, definitely.
We've seen him saying things that have been captured on camera before that he has decided within hours were.
Yeah.
Or minutes, or seconds.
Sometimes
that what he actually
immediately denies what he just said.
Exactly.
There's no reason to believe what he says.
Right.
So this is all resting on Schumer's credibility. They weren't going to grant him credibility, so it didn't matter what he said either. So instead, what we have is a GOP that's unwilling to make a deal.
That's right. Hilariously, this is my favorite story, because like Friday, like despite Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan not wanting to get a deal done because they felt like it was a winning strategy for them, a few poor fools... walked around
this
Capitol Hill all Friday
afternoon. Playing with the emotions
afternoon.
Of moderates in
right,
a way
exactly.
that's really sad.
Right, and we're going to get to a specific story about what they're working on right this second. As you're listening to this podcast on Monday, they might be working on something completely different, or maybe the government will be running, but I sort of don't think so.
I sort of doubt it.
But anyway, so Lindsey Graham, bless his heart, on Friday night, goes to Mitch McConnell's office at around 7 o'clock and is in there until 7:30.
Right.
He leaves... his office at 7:30, goes to Chuck Schumer's office, and is in there until about 7:45, at which point he goes directly back to Mitch McConnell's office. And apparently at this point, people were like, what the fuck is Lindsey Graham up to?
Yeah.
And started to get some flack, because they were like, what shenanigans is he up to here?
Single-handedly
he's trying to
stop the shutdown, which he was.
Right. So he claimed that he wasn't trying to make a deal,
no,
and he wasn't doing anything in Chuck Schumer's office. He'd only gone to Chuck Schumer's office for a few minutes to get something to eat.
Now, here's one thing I'll say. I am guilty of going into random Senate offices for the snacks.
I'm sure they have food. Yeah.
Because they each have...
And he was probably hungry. It's been a long day.
They each have snacks from their home state. So some like
that.
Some places have worse snacks. Like Georgia has peanuts. Like I'm obviously not into peanuts, so like I'm not going to go visit Georgia.
Yeah. What's South Carolina have?
Oh God, I don't remember.
Right.
I somewhere There's a few that have like pretzels or like things like that. So you've got to, sometimes you end up in a weird state where you're like, oh, I'm in Wyoming. They have potato chips. I don't know why, but I'm just going to eat some, you know, like you just end up in a weird office and you're like, I don't, I'm not like here to talk to you guys.
Jerky or something like that. I don't know.
You're just like there to get a snack. Like some, you know, the Pennsylvania will have Hershey's Kisses, like, you know, whatever it is. So sometimes you got to get in there and get a snack.
Yeah.
Because, but that's not what Lindsey Graham was doing.
That series of events was obviously not him going to Chuck Schumer's office to get a snack.
No.
And it didn't take long for the reporting to be that aides were saying that he was shopping a 2-week deal.
Yeah.
To keep
the government
open.
He wants
to go home. He wanted to go home for the weekend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I get it. You know. Yeah. But.
So my sort of like at least general takeaway from this is that like if we can sort of properly sell the events that led to this and. There's some parts and pieces to it, so it's not easy.
And we're not going to be able to do
and
it because of that.
And we don't tell a great story.
No, we're Democrats. Bad storytellers.
Bad storytellers. So I have some concerns. But if we could be very clear about the fact that it's the Republicans who are not willing to negotiate here, and neither are we. Like, let's be honest about it. Nobody is.
Well, no, I want to say one thing,
like,
though, which is that
it's on them because we could have gotten this done, it seems like, if we could have just given Chuck and Nancy another 24 hours.
We also are a party that represent a majority of the country that are in a minority and are being told we just constantly have to hand over more things.
Sure.
They have not negotiated in good faith on this issue once.
No, they
haven't.
So
we shouldn't give them more. Especially, you know, over the DREAM Act, over DACA. We have already given them
enough.
Which
is a winning
DACA is supported by 84% of the nation. That means a majority of Republicans are in favor of DACA, not just a majority of Democrats. So I don't want to hear that we should give over more.
Yeah.
You know, that's what they're trying to tell us, that, you know, they're willing to go with CHIP, but we can't be expecting DACA and CHIP. We're talking about two of the most popular pieces of legislation in the country.
Right.
CHIP polls at 90%, DACA polls at 84%.
They're both ultimately children's issues.
They're both ultimately children's issues. They are win-wins for every single person in Congress except for one fringe part of the Republican Party that do not have enough votes to pass legislation.
Right. They have enough votes to make sure legislation doesn't pass, though.
Right. No, exactly. But this is not a majority issue. I mean, these are majority issues.
Right.
I'm just saying, like, this is not an issue of us trying to get an unpopular thing snuck in under the wire.
Right.
We're talking about the Democrats being told they have to give things over in order to get an issue that polls at 84% passed.
Yeah.
I don't want to hear that from them.
I agree. I think if we can get to the point where it becomes clear to everyone that it is 25 members of the House who won't ever probably vote on DACA that are the reason that this thing is not ultimately going to get passed, then I'm for it.
But the problem is, it's not 25 members of the House. It's 25 members of the House and the leadership of the House because they're taking cues from the president.
And the leadership of the Senate, who just basically sort of like want to win on this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the problem is not that the votes aren't there for this issue. Anyone who's not a fool idiot, who's not from a district that's actually insane, is willing to vote for DACA.
Yeah. If Mitch McConnell tied it to the continuing resolution,
he would have
80 votes.
He has to give senators cover so that they can vote for this in states where they might be primaried. I get that. Absolutely.
Sure.
He is able to do that, though.
Yeah.
This bill is covered right now. Exactly.
Yeah.
This bill is cover.
Yeah.
The House is the same thing. There are certain people that are going to need cover in order to vote for this bill, but they are also going to have to know that they're going to need cover to not vote for this bill, too. Because this bill is so massively popular that it sort of doesn't matter whether or not it's tied to any. The fact that they're trying to extract things from the Democratic Party for a bill that is for everyone, makes everyone more popular is why I'm like, fuck you guys.
Yeah.
In any case, right now, there's a sad story of a group of moderates wandering their way around the halls of the Senate trying to tackle the big problems and mostly just doing busy work in the process because moderate senators are having a bipartisan meeting today.
Yeah.
Because they're trying to make a compromise. But it's all the senators that don't understand why we're in this situation to begin with. So, like, I don't know what they're going to do. It's literally, I'm going to tell you who it is. It's Lamar Alexander, Chris Coons, Joe Manchin, Susan Collins, Jeff Flake, Lindsey Graham, Dick Durbin, Mark Warner, Lisa Murkowski, Tim Kaine, and Jeanne Shaheen. These people are identical to each other. These are just all the people who are this kind of person. You know, like, these people don't know why we're in this situation because they are outside of the framework of this conversation entirely.
Sure. Yeah.
I don't, who cares what Mark Warner thinks we should do? He doesn't know. Like, sure. You know, yeah. Like, yeah. Fucking Susan Collins and Mark Warner can sit in there all day trying to hash out a deal.
Right.
Who do they have sway with that's going to pass this deal?
No.
It's only with each other. There's just 20 of them in there that are like, why can't we be reasonable? We're not being reasonable.
Right.
So
we're not
your
living
deal,
in times where that's what
your deal
we
is
do.
Useless to us. Yeah. Exactly.
Right, yeah.
Their plan would reopen the government through February 8th, and then McConnell would have to commit to holding an immigration vote on the Senate floor before right. that date. However, McConnell right. said, oh, sure, I'll do that.
Yeah.
The problem is most Democrats
him.
Are like, well, what about Paul Ryan? Because
right.
already we've been in the situation. The last
yeah,
time we tried to pass an immigration
the
bill.
The Senate has passed
yeah.
comprehensive immigration that was bipartisan.
You know who didn't pass it? The
right.
House.
Never even took
it
up. It
never took up
it's sad.
The bill.
Just,
yeah.
It's collecting dust
so
currently somewhere.
Who cares if the House, if they're going to vote on it in the Senate and it's just going to sit aimlessly in the House forever and ever
right.
and never, you know, collecting dust.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if they vote on it in the Senate. So a lot of Democrats were like, no.
right.
Fool me once.
Yeah.
Also, fool on,
yeah.
shame
so
on
they're,
me
they're
even
wanting,
that time.
They're wanting the same thing from Paul Ryan
yeah.
is what they're wanting.
And
well.
That's kind of what's holding up this bipartisan deal, which is, of course, something was holding it up because this bipartisan deal is the same people who always pass a bipartisan deal.
Yeah.
These people are happy to work together. Their views are nearly identical. I like Joe Manchin and Jeff Flake are the same.
Yes.
There's no reason for us to be sitting around like,
right.
how are they? Bipartisanship is so important. Bipartisanship
right.
looks like Jeff Flake and Joe Manchin pretending they're in different parties.
Yeah, I was going to say, Jeff Flake is literally leaving because his party is too crazy. And Joe Manchin is a person who has thought about flipping parties.
Yeah, so. I don't need the two of them to be telling me what a good deal is. In any case. I bring you back to a villain of the early days of the podcast.
Mm.
Ben Nelson,
oh, him,
who I used to talk about
guy.
A lot.
Oh, well, he
that
was,
guy
oh God, who was
held
worse
up
than Ben Nelson?
The ACA
maybe only Joe Lieberman,
single-handedly
right. yeah.
4 weeks
right.
over trying to extract, as a Democrat, spending cuts. Like,
right.
I can't yeah. with any of these people.
Yeah.
They're all useless to me.
Yeah.
In any case, they're all like, maybe we'll do it, maybe we won't. Trump is not talking to the Democratic leadership post-Senate, post-Schumer meeting at all. So
sure.
no, the thing that I think has been most shocking to people is that Trump is, like, nowhere to be found.
Yeah.
He talked to Schumer independently.
He had a photo shoot this weekend at the White House.
He had a photo shoot. He didn't talk to the Republicans about talking to Schumer. So instead, usually in this situation, a president would be helping negotiate this deal because
no.
that's what a president does.
He just doesn't want to hold up the train.
No. He doesn't want to.
Even though he's the great negotiator.
Right. He's a great, he's literally taught us the art of the deal, according to
yeah,
his
right.
own work.
Yeah.
But apparently thinks he might be a distraction in this conversation.
Oh, really? Oh, interesting.
In any case, so no one's talking to anyone, and that's
no.
why the shutdown, I have a feeling when this podcast hits your ears on Monday, it's probably still going to be going on.
Right.
If it's not,
something
it'll come
will
back.
Happen.
Yeah.
I know. Yeah, exactly.
Thankfully, one of the things that Trump is always trying to make the Senate do is go nuclear and throw out the filibuster.
Right.
And so far, they have held their line, including this time when Mitch McConnell said, now, we all know the Senate has the Senate minority has the power to filibuster. I support that right from an institutional point of view. But the question is, when do you use it? Because he's trying to make them feel guilty, but also
yeah,
trying
right.
to tell Trump, no, we're not going to get
we're
rid
not
of this.
Going to do that.
That'd be
yeah.
such a fool move.
It
I, though, said, because, you know, they did it for, they got rid of it
yeah,
for
Supreme Court.
The Supreme Court.
Nice.
So they've done it before. I feel like in a situation like this, to do that is to truly break it and buy it. Because, like, I feel like they absolutely can't do that for a number of reasons. But among them is the fact that the Democrats are the only thing giving Republicans who are not wing nuts cover right now.
Right.
They can say, oh,
right.
we just didn't get a chance to vote on this thing. Oh, I support a Dream Act, of course, but I just didn't support blah, blah, blah. You know, like
yeah.
they can pretend like it's the Democrats that are holding up the train and that's why they couldn't
yeah.
vote for X, Y, and Z. They can, you know, give with both hands where they can say we voted, you know, they can say to the conservatives, we had to vote for this bill because we wanted to get these cuts. And they can say
yes.
to the Democrats, we had to vote for this bill because we love children so much. Like they can
yeah.
do that. They can talk out of both sides of their mouth when the Democrats are in the room.
Right.
If they eliminate the Democrats from the room, if the Democrats are gone, A, will reveal that there are some party breakdowns that are much harsher than we are have been led to believe because we've been blaming Democrats for the problem. But really, the problem has always been coming from within
right.
the Republican Party.
That's true.
And B, there's no one to blame when everything is wrong. You know? Like, if there's no one to blame, when everything falls apart, there's no one to be like, well, they made us put this and that made the bill worse. And then, you know, like, they can't do that. Like, we weren't allowed in the room.
Yeah.
So what? You have all three chambers.
Right.
You can't get anything done.
You have 51 votes.
You have 51 votes in the Senate.
So, like, you didn't need us to begin with.
So. Exactly. Yeah. So tell us how we were suddenly responsible for everything.
Yeah, that's true.
So
that's what they know.
I mean, the Senate, I think there are a bunch, especially because the Senate is really theirs to lose in this next election. And so for them, I think it's a bad move to do anything that could compromise their ability to be like, we're under attack still. Right. The Democratic minority is trying
right.
to, you know,
right. exactly.
like if they yeah. if they want to play that game, then they're just going to lose the Senate for no reason.
Totally.
In any case. Now, one thing Brent and I have been discussing a lot is who's going to get the blame for this and whether or not that's a good thing and whether or not that will have implications in 2018.
Yeah.
And we have been falling on different sides of this, which has been interesting because, as you know, often we just militantly agree with it, with each other.
Totally.
So we have been looking at some polls from the last few weeks and then also right as the shutdown has hit.
Right. Because, of course, everybody loves to poll whose fault it's going to be whenever there's a shutdown. Or, like, which is more important, keeping the government open or whatever it is.
Serving bears tequila on Tuesdays.
Right, exactly. Yes.
The first thing I'm going to say, though, before we begin the conversation, is that the last time we had a shutdown was in 2013.
Yes.
And the Democrats came out of the shutdown with a 7-point lead in generic polling.
Yes.
They had lost it by the next month. And by the next year, the Republicans swept.
That's so very true.
It could be that this conversation doesn't matter at all.
Yes.
However, if it does matter,
right,
we're here to argue about whether it's going to matter in a good way or a bad way.
Right. Yeah. So there's some, there's a few sort of wonky things with the polls. Because when asked, over 50% say, or about approximately 50% say that it would be either Donald Trump or Republicans that would be responsible for the shutdown.
Right.
So that's great. Now, it's fairly even, 41 to 36 Republicans would get blamed in Congress, congressional Republicans,
that's
to 36,
absent of
Trump, to 36 Democrats. So that's fairly close, 41 to 36 there. So that's nearly a toss-up. Around the
margin of error. Yeah, because this is within the margin of error. It's about the margin of error.
So, obviously, each party fully blames the other party, sort of basically equally.
And also, these blames fall on party lines for the most part. So, most Republicans blame Democrats, and most Democrats blame, obviously.
And also, both parties, independents say they would blame Republicans 34%, Democrats 27%. So that's
still a close call.
Right.
Edging towards Republican blame.
The thing that has concerned me, and this is an actual tie in the poll, and I feel like who knows where this will go. It could move in either direction, I think, depending on what everybody's messaging is. But 42% of voters say it's not worth shutting down the government to pass a DACA bill. And 42% say that it is worth it.
Right.
Yeah. So it's a literal even split on sort of like what this actual debate is here.
Yeah.
So,
it's coming in quite evenly. Now, I have been saying all week to almost anyone who would listen, people are very sick of me at the moment, that I think because when the shutdown happened, Brent was like, damn it. And I was like, aha, we did it. Because I have been very pro the Democrats taking a hard line.
Sure. Yeah.
At this juncture.
Yeah.
Part of the reason I think that is because DACA is so wildly popular and the thing that's holding it up, this border wall proposal, is so unpopular.
Yeah.
You know, 84% of Americans support DACA. 27% of Americans support the border wall.
Right.
So it's – or 27% of voters say it's worth shutting down the government to fund a border wall. Border wall. But I think 35% of Americans support the wall in general. It's a much less popular thing to do.
Right.
But I also think that – well, there's two things. We're largely driving a turnout-related – we're largely enacting a turnout-related election in this in 2018.
Right.
Our ability to get people elected is largely dependent on turnout. It's not dependent on flipping independents, and it's not dependent on getting Republicans to vote for us. Now, independents – you know, we have to flip some independents.
Right, exactly.
Trump is polling so low – the Republicans are polling so low that they're going to need to flip many more independents than we are to make up their difference.
Right, because they already in most – I mean, not – not in every district, obviously, because it's different in every district. But just broadly, they have fewer people. So they are always in a place where they are needing to turn.
Right. They always have fewer people.
Right.
And we always just have people that don't show up.
Right.
I think that in doing something bold, because I think a lot of Democrats have been sitting around for the last year. I would not have said this in 2013. In 2013, sure. If the Democrats had tried to do a shutdown, it would have been like, get your lives together.
Right.
In 2018, I think because we've spent a year just hurtling from one crisis to another, and most Democrats have felt like, where is the help? How do we stand up to these people? Why aren't we doing anything? Why isn't Chuck Schumer doing anything?
Yeah.
He hasn't been doing anything. That's why.
Right.
You've been feeling that way. This is the first time that I've seen them have any teeth.
Yeah,
I think that from a turnout point of view, that actually is a positive for us. Because for the a majority of Democrats do support doing a shutdown for DACA. Now, a majority of the country may not support that. A majority of the country is either not undecided or against it.
Right.
But a majority of Democrats, the people that we need to remember to vote on Election Day, are in favor of it.
Yeah.
And it has actually given us a sense that we could do something. We have something. We can negotiate on the basis of something. Sure. This is our only leverage.
Right.
This is the only thing we have.
It is.
This is all we can do to make DACA happen.
And if you tell you where our disagreement has been, is that my just sort of underlying concern about this is that, you know, during the shutdown in 2013, basically all Democrats, and I'm sure we're going to start probably seeing these clips played and probably even some ads done and things.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody was out there saying, because the reason that shutdown happened was because Republicans Republicans wanted to deal with spending.
Yeah.
And they were tying it to this, and they were saying and they were basically trying to make the two issues sort of sound the same.
Yeah.
And we as Democrats, we on this podcast said, the spending doesn't have any damn thing to do with the continuing resolution.
Was it raising the debt ceiling?
But this is sort of the debt ceiling is not necessarily the same thing. But this is basically just to sort of keep the government open to where we sort of continue to pay people and keep things open and things like that. And this again is. These are certainly not the same things. And the minority party is often, I realize that Republicans have all the chambers now. So I think the chances are more great that they will get blamed because they're running everything.
Yeah.
But it is usually the minority party that gets blamed for a government shutdown because they are the ones who have to do it because they have to do it to extract something. Now, yes, I totally agree with you that the thing that they are trying to extract, everybody agrees with, and it also really fires up the party. So I think that there maybe is hope that even if broadly they get blamed for it, it won't be an electoral loser. But my fear is that as this goes on, does the country sort of be why did the Democrats shut down the government to get this DACA deal when we're into whatever day of it we are, and people aren't getting their paychecks? That's my only concern about it. But that's also a messaging thing.
Yes.
And that's another concern, as you and I have said.
Right.
But I just think that we need to sort of make sure that it's the Republicans who are either getting blamed for it or I think you would contend that we are at least getting sort of within our own party credit for taking a stand on something.
I think there's a few things that are different about this shutdown from 2013 that make this sort of a unique case for me. One of them being that in 2013, the Republicans didn't have all three chambers.
Right.
So in this situation, we're seeing a Congress that's taking its cues from a president. They could pass whatever they
want.
They're
insane cues.
To pass. The cues are insane. We've all been what the fuck?
What?
Another thing we know, though, for sure, that we didn't know then, is that this is a president that was elected with a minority of the country.
Yeah.
This is not a president with a mandate in the same way that Obama had a mandate.
Yeah.
So there is a slightly different expectation about how this could go and should go, I think, at least on the part of Democrats.
Sure.
Because unlike in 2013 when we all felt like, why can't we work together? Why are you guys being so fucking difficult?
Right.
In 2018, the motto of the left is resist.
Yeah.
I mean, the motto of the left is fuck the system. Sure. This is fucking bonkers, you know? So I think, on the one hand, there's more leeway for that kind of extreme action. Anyway.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that.
Yeah, and I think that there is also more of a reason for us to be distrustful of the other side. Obama wasn't negotiating in bad faith the way that they have been.
True.
And so there was the Republicans at that time were the ones negotiating in bad faith. And in this time, they're the ones negotiating with bad faith. The difference is they're the ones in charge right now.
Right.
So negotiating in bad faith when you're in charge is actually your fault. Like, you know, when you're in the minority, you can act crazy and everyone's like, oh, cute. You know, like if you're in the majority in all three chambers, then it's like, well, figure out your fucking lives. You need nine Democratic votes out of all the Democratic votes in the whole world. You don't need a single vote in the House.
Yeah.
And you can't fucking find nine moderate Democrats who are willing to vote for your nonsense bill because you won't consider this thing that 84% of the country wants.
Right.
I also think that it was their miscalculation. I know why they held up Chip to do this.
Yeah.
I think it was their miscalculation to think that we couldn't keep Chip and DACA in our heads at the same time.
Right.
And also that anyone would think that it was acceptable to hold up Chip to do this with it.
Well, right. That's the reason why. Because they have been kicking Chip down the road. And then
It
was for this because this was what they were going to use to not have to deal
with
DACA.
They specifically set it up so that the Democrats would have to do a shutdown or go back on their own word to
words
their constituents.
Chip. Yeah, because the Republicans are already out there being like, oh, well, the Democrats, you know, didn't accept the CHIP funding, and so they're trying to blame the Democrats for like not funding CHIP.
Literally,
which is like,
zero people are going to be.
Nobody's buying that. Thankfully,
of course not.
Nobody's
of
buying that.
Of course not. But so the only real figure that we have of concern here is the fact that for the most part, a majority of people don't like shutting down the government. Full stop. Period. No questions.
Yes.
I think that in this situation, the federal government has been such a source of stress and frustration for people that it is actually.
Maybe
not,
it won't be so bad.
It's kind
if
of
it's
a
not
relief.
Working.
What Donald Trump can do so much less damage with no government than he can with. I mean, he can do. The damage he's going to do. He's going to do whether or not the government is open or closed. But I'm just sort of like it. Kind of. It's like taking a toy away from a child that's about to break the toy.
Sure.
Like we're just sort of like taking our hands off the wheel for a second.
Right.
I understand that you know. We want to see our federal employees paid. We want our federal parks to be open. We want to make sure they don't use this to gut federal agencies, which they have done in the past.
Of course.
You know, we want to make sure
because most of the one of the groups of people who are not going to be going to work right now or be getting paid is the IRS.
Mm-hmm.
So they might just decide that
but also,
we don't need taxes anymore.
they might decide that, but they also just imposed a huge burden on the IRS in the form of this new tax bill. They actually need the IRS more than we do at this point.
It's true.
I'm happy to stop paying federal taxes at this point because obviously going to the wrong priorities. And I'm happy for all of that wealth to stay in California at this point.
Sure.
This is the first time Democrats have felt that way in a long time.
Yeah.
So I sort of feel like that's actually their issue, not our issue.
Yeah.
The IRS is their problem, not our problem. But the reason that people don't like these shutdowns is because they feel like, you guys, why can't we work it out? We have been feeling that way for months at this point.
Exactly.
This is not a new feeling.
One year, almost to the day.
For a full year, we've been like, oh my God, you guys, why can't we be civil?
Right.
And so I don't think anyone's going to be like, those Democrats couldn't be civil. Because the Republicans have been so uncivil this whole time that I'm feeling so empowered that the Democrats finally fucking tried something.
For sure.
They haven't tried anything yet.
They haven't.
This is their first trying of anything. If they fail, they fail. The Republicans swept, you know, the midterms right after they did a shutdown anyway.
Right. That's what sort of like, at least.
I don't even, like, who cares?
That's what gives me a little hope is that we're still, like you said, we're still, you know, 8 months away from that, having a vote on anything. And
this could flip three times by then. We could have three shutdowns by then.
It'll be whatever the newest crisis is the day before it's going
to
have the greatest
effect. We don't
have the
ability to have a memory at this point. But also, I think that if anything, this is going to make Democrats feel like, okay, they're trying something. We're trying a thing.
Yeah.
Because I think actually, because of just how cruel the optics of it are, DACA plays as a very personal issue to people who have no personal connection to DACA.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know any DACA recipients, but I feel very personally invested in DACA's passage in a way that I rarely do about issues that don't personally affect me in the slightest. You know, like, if this was about farm subsidies, I would be like, I don't know.
Right.
Do whatever you're going to. I don't care.
Yeah.
Do whatever you want.
Yeah.
I might have a position on it in a theoretical sense.
Right.
But something about this issue, because it is about children, because it was tied to CHIP, because, you know, because DACA recipients are sort of, like, embedded in the fabric of so many of our communities.
Yeah.
this just
well,
doesn't...
especially here in Southern California,
in Southern
too.
California, especially. But, I mean, this just doesn't feel right.
Yeah.
To the extent that Trump has admitted it's not right.
Well, yeah.
You know? And so I think everyone might just be like, well, let's try it.
Yeah, sure.
And if they blame the Democrats, right. I'm going to claim credit. I think we should call it claiming credit for the shutdown instead of blame for the shutdown.
I mean, I like that plan. If it gets to the point where it looks like things are maybe not going great for us, like, let's just totally spin it and be
call
like,
it a
well,
win.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's what they're doing.
Yeah.
So in any case, I'm not worried about it, and I'm for it.
They certainly had some bad optics for the Republicans this week, mm-hmm. because while this specific person was not a dreamer himself, it did not look good for them as we were debating.
He's a dreamer. But, he's not a DACA recipient.
Well, he's not. Right. Yes, correct. Yeah. But, you know, as we were debating whether the government was going to shut down over a DACA bill, we had Jorge Garcia, who's a 39-year-old landscaper and father of two, who's lived in the United States for 39 years.
No, 30 years.
30 years. He is 39.
He came when he was nine years old with an undoccumented family.
Family, right. He's been living in Detroit, like an upstanding member of the community.
Right.
He's received like actual extensions. So he's been like going through the process. Like he had received extensions under the Obama administration.
Right. Because he got his first order of removal in 2009, but the Obama administration kept giving him extensions.
Right.
And he was once again given an order of removal. And obviously the Trump administration was like, or, you know, ICE under the Trump administration was kind of like, not this time, buddy.
Yeah. There was a very painful video of him basically like finding out that he's going to have to go back to Mexico.
It was at the airport. It was as he was leaving.
As he was leaving. Right. Yeah. He got the notice to return in November from the Trump administration.
Yeah. And he's somebody who the grounds upon which they've been extending him was that they were waiting to see if a more all-encompassing DREAM Act was going to pass because he would have qualified for a DREAM Act. DACA obviously only applies to specific age groups and he's outside of that age group. But the DREAM Act in total would probably apply to also people like him. And so they were giving him extensions, assuming that a DREAM Act might be forthcoming.
Right.
And he is being sent back to Mexico.
Yeah.
Like, he's that...
got a family here.
Video is horrifying.
Never lived in Mexico. Well, I mean, lived in Mexico till he was nine. But it's obviously not home to him.
Right.
Yeah, it's heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the problem with this issue.
That, yes.
There's nothing, there's no winning video side. No viral video that's like, this is why we can't have DACA.
Yeah.
The videos, the reason 84% of the country supports it.
The president tried it this week by releasing that video that blamed all Democrats for like murders by undocumented people, which is like, okay.
But also everyone knows those are trumped up stats that mean nothing. He's been using them since, we've had time to discredit those stats at this point. Yes. So it's like, no one even cares. But this is why I think, like, DACA is one thing where it's, like, actually, like, a universal thing that is basic decency. And what this shutdown shows is that the Republicans are not willing to be basic, decent people.
Yeah.
It's not about a policy disagreement.
Right.
This is about basic human decency.
Yeah.
And because of that, I don't think there's a way for them to come out of this looking like heroes.
Now, I just had an idea. I'm still sort of just, like, concerned and not totally loving how this is going yet.
However, if
this works, I am suggesting to anyone who will listen that we should start holding out on future funding bills for
everything.
Anything that has an 84% approval rate, because there's other things. Like let's get background checks.
Background
passed
checks, exactly.
Next time around.
I think that if they could hold up Congress over background checks right now, it would fucking change lives. Like, I think we would end up with like huge amounts of votes that we didn't even know what to do with from people that we never thought would vote for us because they're living in fucking fear because they live in a state that doesn't have any fucking background checks and there are guns everywhere.
Yeah.
Like, I think this is literally the kind of hardball that someone like Bernie Sanders rose to relevance on the backs of because. Yeah. The equivocating was part of why we were so frustrated.
Yeah.
You know, this is why I think those moderates are a bunch of nobodies who are going to get nothing done.
Right.
Because the moderates have been the equivocators this whole time.
Yeah.
And I think people are sick of equivocating.
Yeah.
And I was ready for the government to shut down. Because I was like, I just want to see that the Democrats are trying something.
Yeah.
And I understand that there are downsides to a government shutdown.
Sure, right.
It's not to say that I don't think this is extreme action.
Yeah, you're not delusional. I mean,
I'm not delusional. But I think that we and I'm actually going to talk about this in our next story as well, have been thinking short term for a long time. The sort of Clinton model of Democratic policy is a very short term policy.
Yeah.
And I think when you consider the long game sometimes involves being a Black Lives Matter person who gets up on stage with Bernie Sanders and calls him out. And sure. Were we pissed when that happened at the time? Absolutely. Do I think it totally changed the conversation on the left? Yes. Like, I think that in that moment, I was reacting like all people were reacting to the short-term optics of a situation that frustrated me. In the long term, I think it was hugely successful.
Yeah.
And that is something that I think I'm going to talk about it as it relates to the Me Too movement right now.
Yeah.
But I think that we should start thinking that way in Congress, because otherwise we've been dealing with a kind of intractability that has been impossible to break out of.
Yeah.
Sometimes you got to shake shit up to break out of the conversation as it was.
Yeah.
Sometimes you have to say a thing that isn't maybe the right thing to say in the context, but starts a conversation that's valuable. Like, these are just part of political strategy is also thinking in the long term. I think a shutdown right now to show that the Democrats are willing to play hardball if they need to might be terrible in the short term. I think I would love it if we had a way of doing something less terrible in the short term. I want federal employees to be paid not just for this, but more money in general. Like, I want there to be more of them. But I mean, I think at a certain point you have to be like, we got to do something dramatic to be like, no, we are here.
Yeah.
In any case.
Yeah.
And now that brings me to Izzy's Ansari.
Yeah.
So you probably heard about this by this point.
Of course you have.
On January 13th, babe.net, which is a dubious website.
Yeah,
anyway,
we're
going to get to that
more a little bit, because I feel like they are part of this problem.
But, yeah.
But not this problem is, necessarily, but I mean,
this
like
is a typical way that this unfolds. So I also am sort of like, they're part of a problem that we knew was going to be a problem. That
of course.
It's not a surprising problem.
Yeah.
They published an account from a 23-year-old woman who they have dubbed Grace, about an encounter she had with Aziz Ansari, where she says she feels that she experienced sexual assault.
Right.
And the story, though, at least as it's described by Babe, is sort of like her kind of like saying no while he tries to have sex with her, and then kind of ultimately consenting to, you know, like it's a story that is kind of a typical story of people having sex in places, you know?
Sure.
And the thing that she's describing is not Weinstein level. It's not manipulative in the way that it's not, you know, he's not threatening her.
No.
He's not sort of threatening her professional life and whatever.
Right.
It's just like a private thing that happens in a private home that made her uncomfortable.
Right.
And babe.net kind of published it. They didn't really fact check it very well. They didn't really give him a chance to reply. They did a lot. They did a lot of things that, from a journalistic point of view, were dubious at best.
Right. And they also sort of like, I feel like they didn't help.
They didn't describe the story well.
They didn't describe the story well, and they also,
there's a lot of editorializing that shouldn't have been in there.
That shouldn't have been in there. That was also like that hurt more than anything.
Yes.
You know, like just at the very beginning when they're talking about like her first getting over there, they talk about like Grace, you know, basically like being upset that she didn't get to pick whether she was having red or white wine. And that's early in the story. So if you're reading that actual Babe piece, like your immediate like headspace is like
fuck
this
Grace.
Whiny 23-year-old,
you know,
bimbo who wanted white wine and got pissed off that, you know, she did like that. So like there were things peppered throughout this piece that like just sort of like
it kind of served to discredit her story, not discredit her description of the events, but discredit her as a narrator
as
of the story.
Exactly. Yes.
Because what the story actually describes is something that is fairly common. It's men continuing to pursue you after you've said no.
Right. Exactly.
Not in a violent way.
No.
Just in a way where you're like, listen, dude, said no. Let's calm down here.
Yeah.
And so this, and you know, a lot of, this is right after Aziz Ansari just had won a Golden Globe.
Right, he was wearing his Time's Up pin.
He's been on one of the talk shows talking about what a great feminist he is. I think it was Colbert or somewhere where he made the audience say that they were feminists. And a lot of his comedy is about being a nice guy and decent guy. You know, he wrote a dating book at one point that's like, dating is a generally decent guy, you know, basically.
Right.
And first of all, as we all know, being a nice guy, like being any kind of guy, is just a kind of guy. Like, you can use that to be manipulative just as you can use any other quality.
Sure.
You can use your size to be manipulative.
Yep.
You can
fame.
Use your fame to be manipulative. And you can use being nice to be manipulative.
Sure.
That is something that nice guys are can be just as manipulative as mean guys. Like, that's not a thing that I don't think any women, I don't think women would disagree with me on that.
No.
But so in any case, everyone on the internet lost their fucking minds almost immediately. And then suddenly it became kind of like, well, first of all, the New York Times and the Atlantic both published pieces, not lambasting Babe, but I mean, also lambasting Babe, but lambasting Grace herself for bringing the story up. They all kind of ascribed these ulterior motives, like they were all fame seeking or they were just, you know, trying to do hit pieces and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And it's partly because their account makes it sound like she's overreacting the entire time.
Right.
But also it kind of like entered us into what I knew was coming, which was the sort of minefield chapter.
Yeah, you've been talking about
this. I've been talking about this coming for a long time.
Yeah.
The chapter where suddenly everyone's like, hold on.
Yeah.
We've gone too far.
Right.
Because our understanding of sexual consent is changing right now.
Right.
This is an evolving conversation. And that means that we are having to address behaviors that have been considered acceptable in the past.
Well, and this is very similar to, I would say, at least in many ways, the conversation that we sort of like not too long ago, and I think is still ongoing, but maybe less in the forefront, about when we were talking a lot about campus assault.
Yeah.
Because that was sort of like the what does
that happen?
The no means no, you know, what when is when are
when
you
is
supposed
no
to
yes
know?
And
what,
yes
when
is no,
no
and
when someone is saying no but didn't actually say no, and when
and how,
there's alcohol
what is actually
involved,
rape and, if and what
right,
you know
exactly. And this had a lot of those similar elements.
Which is why I expected this exact backlash, also because I've been listening to men tell me it's coming. They're gonna the witch hunt's gonna go too far. They keep calling it a witch hunt. I keep telling people it's not a witch hunt because a witch hunt describes witches being hunted. As my dad said, it's like calling a deer hunt the time that deer took up arms against their predators. Like that's not what a deer hunt is. That's not what a witch hunt is either. In any case, my point is I have a lot of thoughts on this. One of which is that, in my opinion, this story, more than any of the other stories, has forced regular men to reckon with how their actual everyday behaviors,
even as
feminists, even as nice guys, has been manipulative, has been sometimes abusive. It hasn't been criminally abusive, but has echoed a lot of the same problems that we're talking about with men like Weinstein and Cosby.
And I totally agree with you. And it's been fascinating to me how, you know, so many women have really sort of like been like, you know, going against or not pleased with like this, how this has played out.
It's
with
very generationally
with Grace
divided
and,
though.
And to me, I was having this conversation with somebody the other day and I was like, you know, we can sort of like have whatever discussion about whether, you know, whether Aziz Ansari sort of like deserved this, for lack of a better word. Like that, I think, is sort of like a discussion that could be had.
Right.
But like, if this story leads us to have a conversation about whether you can be acting like this on fucking dates with women and using whatever power it is that you have over them, then, like, it's a conversation that is worth having.
Well, and that's what I have said. I had this exact conversation with a group of men who were like, it's so unfair to him. It's like a, you know, they were essentially using the witch hunt argument. They were saying it's unfair to take him down over this. And I was like,
and I don't think that he should be brought down.
No, I'm not even saying that. What I'm saying is that thousands of women have been brought down on much more dubious charges just for bringing this conversation up. For centuries, we've been doing this.
Yep.
For centuries, we've destroyed women for accusing men of any kind of sexual impropriety, of any kind of sexual abuse. For centuries, we've seen those women's names dragged through the press, while men like Harvey Weinstein have been walking around for 30 years doing this to other women. So excuse me if my priority is not Aziz Ansari's career in this moment.
Right.
I understand why he maybe is getting a kind of, you know, why he's kind of on the losing end of an evolving conversation at this moment.
Right.
I'm not denying that. And he hasn't done anything criminal.
No.
And so,
no one's calling
for him to go to jail.
I was
going to
say, I think
he'll be fine.
He'll be fine. Yeah.
These men, by the way, are going to be fine because that's always how it works.
Yeah.
But my sort of point to them was like, you know, first of all, excuse me if I don't care about that at the moment. What I care about is that right now, for the first time, you suddenly were interested in this conversation.
Yeah.
You suddenly were like, well, why don't women want to have sex with me after they say no?
Right.
You know, like, you suddenly had to think about it. And up until this point, I think the men who we've been dealing with have been such monsters that most men have been able to be like, well, that's not me, so this doesn't involve me.
Right.
And the whole point, women, it involves all women. It's always involved all women. The conversation's been happening among women forever.
Sure. Yeah.
So it's always been a conversation that women have been having. But this is the first moment where men were like, wait a minute. If this could happen to Aziz Ansari over a story that I find dubious, then what am I? What is the behavior? What's the line? And I am suddenly interested in finding that out.
Well, Well, yes, exactly. And it is. It has caused, I think, where just sort of like going a step further than what you just said in terms of sort of like, well, you know, Harvey Weinstein, like those were all such monsters. Like it has caused, I think, men are also just sort of like thinking. Men are remembering times that. They themselves have done this.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you, I don't know a single woman who hasn't had this happen.
Sure.
You know, I mean, and that's this. The reason that we're so shocked by this is because it's happened to every single one of us. And it's so commonplace that we were like, is that assault?
Yeah.
And a lot of women came forward and they were like, I wouldn't have considered that assault. This has happened to me all the time.
Right.
And a lot of women, I think, have been privately very uncomfortable with this sort of thing happening. But we're just sort of like, well, that's the price of being alive as a human being. That's what being a woman is sometimes and we're also sort of socialized to say no, and men are socialized to be persistent. And so part of it is just like a larger cultural problem that we have.
Yeah.
But the point is, something was going to push the Me Too movement into questionable territory. That was always going to happen.
Yeah,
and it's okay for us to say that Aziz Ansari was different than Harvey Weinstein, but we should talk about how.
Right.
And we should also talk about whether what he did was still problematic.
Yes.
And we don't have to do that by sending him to jail.
No,
you know,
don't.
Another person is not in jail, Harvey Weinstein. So again, excuse me if I don't care that much about the specific rich men who are still rich.
He might be, though. Aren't they looking into criminal charges?
Finally.
With him? I think.
I mean, they should be. They were for decades before he bought them all off. But I mean, these are not men who, these are men whose careers are facing fallout in the short term from this. I don't think Aziz Ansari is going to lose his whole livelihood over this.
No, I don't know.
And even if he does, he's a zillionaire. He's not a zillionaire, but he's a millionaire. He's well off. He's okay.
Yeah.
There are zillions of women who have lost their whole livelihoods over this.
Sure, for accusing
men of assaults that they actually did commit.
Correct.
So it's just not my top priority to care what's happening with that. It's a priority for some people, and that's fine.
Yeah.
But this is how movements happen. Movements have to evolve. Movements find, you know, movements happen, attitudes change, they find their level, arguments shift. You know, people do crazy, poorly thought out things and get attention for the wrong reasons, and we talk about why that was wrong.
Yeah.
And the conversation ultimately sifts into something that hopefully is productive. And that is, like, that's going back to Black Lives Matter. I think, you know, we have for a long time been thinking in a short-term way, and humans have a tendency to do this, anyway.
Well, that's easier.
Like with, you know, in the short term, when Black Lives Matter got on that stage with Bernie Sanders, I was like, God damn it.
Right? What?
And then the more I thought about it, the more I was like, that was brilliant.
Yeah.
And also, suddenly I'm talking about Black Lives Matter all the time. And suddenly I've been forced to sit and think, how have I contributed to this culture of white supremacy?
Right.
And suddenly I've been forced to, you know, suddenly as a progressive person on the left who always thought I was doing the right thing, I was forced to really sit with how my life had contributed to this reality.
And we were the only people that were ever going to think about that, which was what was smart on their part.
Yes,
do you know what I mean? Because
that was
getting
a genius.
Because getting on a stage and doing that with a Republican candidate gets you nowhere.
The CPAC stage was not going to lead to anything.
That's a non-starter. They already think that you're an idiot black person. So it's like that.
the reason that worked so well was because it was a brilliant long-term strategy that had to find its level in the short term.
Yeah.
And even at the time, my mom even said that. She was like, you know, they're going to make mistakes because they're a new movement. And just like every new movement makes mistakes. But I think ultimately they've done something brilliant here. This has been a brilliant thing that came out of nowhere that suddenly we're all talking about.
Yeah.
I think, you know, the Me Too movement is sort of the same kind of, it's not organized in the same way, obviously. It's a little bit sort of decentralized in a way that Black Lives Matter wasn't. But this is, there are going to be people who make accusations because they truly felt uncomfortable in a moment where a man abused his power over them, even if it was in a way that wasn't minor. I mean, that was minor and kind of wasn't criminal.
Right.
You know, and
it's okay
for those women to come forward.
It totally is.
And it's okay for us to say, maybe this one wasn't the same as whatever.
Right.
It's okay for us to have the conversation, but the conversation has to involve men too. And without this accusation being made, I don't think it would have. So that's what I have to say about that.
Yeah.
That's... in any case, it's all that anyone's been talking about because we live in Hollywood, so maybe you haven't heard about this and don't care.
I was gonna say.
Whatever. Here's a story that you will care about. Chris Christie is a nobody.
Yeah.
Here's how we know. First of all, don't ever take on the entire Port Authority like a full idiot.
I was going to say.
Bridgegate was one of the dumbest moves in the history of people being people.
It totally was. Because now you, I mean, because you are still living in New Jersey, presumably. Yeah. So you've done the wrong thing.
So in any case, Chrissy tries to go to Newark to go fly somewhere.
Yeah.
Like 3 days after the new governor there is inaugurated. Yeah.
He still has his police escort.
Right. And for 6 months, he gets a police escort.
He goes to his fancy entrance to as governor to go through security and get on the plane.
And be a fancy person who doesn't have to talk to people.
Turns out you can't do that.
Allowed to do that anymore.
As non-governor.
As the Port Authority airport police hasten to remind him.
Yes.
He denies the story, saying that he just had gone to the wrong door and they helped escort him to another door. But what Port Authority said happened is that he tried to go to the VIP entrance. They were like, not today, sucker, and sent him to the regular line.
That's right. Yeah.
And you know what? I've never felt happier about a story in my life. I have read this every day this week.
I was going to say, you told me that. Lila was like, I've literally just been perusing this story, and it's not even a long story. We've told you all the details.
Yeah, those are the details.
That's it. Right there. We just told you. But like,
every day I just take a quick look at that story.
Yeah.
I know. It's my favorite story of the year so far, and I can't quite... It has too many great qualities. It's like a comeuppance by a person who really deserved a comeuppance. It's like retribution for a thing that he never quite had to experience retribution for. Bridgegate was such a dick move. Yeah. And like he put the Port Authority on the line for it. And I was waiting for the moment that he didn't have any authority anymore so they could be like, fuck you, guy.
Yeah. And it came.
And it came 3 days into his return to irrelevancy.
Yeah, that's right. Because he is the most hated former politician alive.
I would
today,
get out of New Jersey if I
he
were
He was
him.
The most hated current politician while he was still a politician
he's still hated and he's in a new less relevant position of being that's nobody
right. Now if you want to really have your head explode, you can read this story and then immediately go watch that video of him falling off of a chair, and then you've got a
the video of him falling off of a chair is
it's one of the great
a cinematic masterpiece.
It is. Yeah.
I don't even know how to
it's like
fully...
a radio show. It's
yeah, he just like sits in a rolling chair and like doesn't know how to sit in a rolling
Republicans
chair.
Republicans, and they're non-sitting.
Yeah. Mitt Romney can't sit in a stool.
No.
Chris Christie can't sit on a rolling chair. No. You would presume that somebody who theoretically has an office job has had to sit in many rolling chairs in his life.
You would think.
But not Chris Christie. That guy.
Nope.
Chris Christie can only sit in a beach chair on a beach that's closed to the public.
Closed to the public. That's right.
And that's the news for the week. Hopefully, we'll see if the shutdown, how long the shutdown goes.
I know. I'm curious.
Could be gone by the time you listen to this. Could be on for the next seven years.
I'm definitely very, now that you and I have had a very substantive debate, by the way, about this.
Because
that's who we are. That's what we do. What were we going to do? Just shout and call each other names for an hour?
I mean, we could have come up with better nicknames than Donald Trump.
I know. Oh, God. I'm going to think of one for you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm curious to see how this plays out now more than I was an hour ago, just because I really sort of want to, although it's still the short term. Next week is still the short term.
Right, yes.
As much as I like immediacy just as much as the next guy.
No, and also I think we have to be prepared to weather a bad turn.
Sure.
There might be a point in this where the Democrats look like they've lost. And that's okay. We should stay strong. There was a point in Me Too this week where Me Too didn't look so strong. It's going to come back better than ever. Don't worry about it. There have been many points where many movements have not looked strong.
That's true.
There was a point where it looked like we were never going to have gay marriage, and then we had it everywhere.
Not everybody's perfect.
It's always darkest before the dawn.
Yes.
In any
wise
case,
words,
my point is, stay strong. Don't let them fool you into thinking that you should panic, America.
Don't let me fool you.
Right. Don't let Brent or anyone fool you into thinking you should panic. Stay strong. Stay calm. Stay even keeled.
I'm going to post a secret panic podcast on my own midweek.
Remember that the federal government hasn't been doing shit for months.
Exactly. Who cares about them anyway?
Who cares? In any case, we hope that federal employees are paid soon.
That's right.
And that they are not stripped of their jobs at the end of this.
Yeah, exactly.
And we'll talk to you next week.
Bye.